I mean, when did dilettante become a bad word?
Ooh.
Is it a bad word? Like, I remember learning that word and thinking, like, okay, people say this as if it's a bad thing, but aren't we all supposed to be exploring a lot of different things?
No. That's That's not productive.
Yeah. So that was another interesting moment. I don't remember how old I was. It was probably like an SAT vocabulary word. And I remember thinking, like, oh, that sounds great. It's like a Renaissance person.
Yeah.
But no, it's actually like kind of pejorative.
Yeah, no, it has a pejorative connotation, but I'm like, oh, maybe I want to reclaim dilettante. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. That's a fun word.
Now's the time.
Yeah, now's the time. Welcome to Settling Is Bullshit, a sweary podcast about claiming your joy. If you are craving healthier boundaries, a greater sense of purpose, or an increased capacity to feel at ease in your own skin, then you are in the right place, my friend. I'm your host, Kate Blauk, joy activist and life coach to smart and sensitive humans. I'm here to offer you practical tools and playful encouragement to step forward and be your most awesome self. My hope is that each episode will leave you feeling a bit more empowered to make brave choices and claim your joy. Hello, my dear. Today's episode is with a friend of mine from graduate school, Carrie Anderson, who in a lot of ways is like a regular person. She works a day job. She's not like a service provider like many of the folks that I've had on the podcast. But Carrie has a really delightful and cool approach to life that I really wanted to have on the podcast and talk about. She's also, like myself, a recovering perfectionist, and I identify as a former academic. She identifies as a former educator, and you'll hear us talk about that a little bit. But we both have really embraced the like non-linear career path, the playful and exploratory approach to life. And Carrie does that through something she calls side quests. And again, you'll hear us talking about it. But this episode is just a really nice, affirming listen for anyone who struggles with perfectionism, for anyone who struggles with like wanting to have your life figured out and feeling like maybe you're not on the path that you're quote unquote supposed to be on. And it's just a great conversation about how maybe we don't have to figure it out and maybe trying new stuff that we're bad at is actually really good for us. So it's a really great conversation about a lot of the things that I've been talking about in recent months. And full disclosure, ADHD got the better of me. We recorded this episode like more than 6 months ago, and I'm excited to finally be delivering it. But it's also really interesting because you're going to hear me talking about running. And in the last 6 months, I've kind of transitioned out of long distance running. And so it was weird and interesting to be editing it and listening to it again. And that just sort of affirms for me what I have talked about a lot on this podcast of the importance of reflective practices and of, you know, creating an archive and going back and listening to ourselves or looking at what we wrote. And I thought about cutting out my discussion of running since that's just not where I'm at in my life anymore. But I think it's cool and important to leave it in and to talk about that a little bit, because the whole point of all of this is that change is inevitable and we have the choice to like roll with it or fight with it. And I'm a big fan of rolling with it to the degree that I am able. So that's a little preview. If you enjoy the episode, please share it. Please leave a review. And I've got a Patreon set up if you want to support the podcast and help me keep the metaphorical lights on. The links to that will be in the show notes. And you can drop me a little money to let me know that you want me to keep doing this. All right. Enjoy. Do you consider yourself a former academic? Is that part of your identity, do you think?
I think so. Whenever I like get together with a new teammate and we do like the coffee chat circuit of like, tell me about yourself, tell me about your background. The way that I lead is, well, I'm a career changer.
Yeah.
And I sort of frame it as, you know, I'm a former educator who started in high school. Like I started in teaching high school and then moved into university research and teaching before pivoting into UX. So that's sort of the through line, is I lean on the like career change element over the like, I was an academic.
Okay, I love that. You're a career changer.
I find that resonates more with folks who have similarly had more alinear paths or not circuitous, but paths that are a little bit less well-defined and less kind of constrained within a particular pathway.
Yeah. And how has that been for you? For me, like, leaving academia was this whole, like, giant identity shift and angsty move out of a tenure-track position. What did sort of your journey look like?
Yeah, good question. When I first went to grad school, my intention was never necessarily to become a professor. It was to learn and study the things that were interesting to me.
Ooh.
And if I happened to fall into an academic job, great. But I wasn't necessarily married to it. I knew I liked teaching because I was a high school teacher first. So as I went through the program, I was like, you know, I could see myself becoming a professor, but it was never a must do. So I didn't have a real identity crisis. It was more of a like, okay, I've taken this thing as far as it can go. I'll do the next thing now.
Interesting. So I mean, what I'm hearing about, I'm hearing very much the like lifelong learner thing in there. But that also tracks for why I wanted to have you on the podcast in the first place, which was to talk about your side quest persona writing adventure, like way of being. And it sounds like I feel like there's sort of an umbrella of like life is just a giant fucking quest.
There's a through line.
Yeah.
There's a through line. Yeah. I'm not about to say I'm on a hero's journey by any means to kind of pull from like narrative constructs, but very much on a journey. And you know, it may be anathema to say in our very like type A perfectionist, like capitalist society, but I don't really have an end game. I don't have like an end point of like, this is the place that I'm shooting for in terms of my life. I'm really just kind of keen to collect a lot of experiences, whatever they are, and see where it takes me. So yeah, side questing has been kind of a fun project to kind of motivate me to do that as part of my day to day.
Yeah. Oh, man. I didn't realize how much I had bought into the idea that I was supposed to be working towards something until you just said that. And I was like, oh, that feels nice.
I mean, but try to say it to somebody. Like, try to say to somebody, no, I don't have a specific goal.
No, I do. Well, I'm a goddamn life coach. Like, I talk to my clients about this. So, like, okay, like, what are we working towards? And I've been working on this myself of, like, what am I working towards? And, like, what if I'm just doing shit and seeing what happens?
Yeah, just seeing what sticks. Like, it won't all stick, but you figure something out along the way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I think one of the ways that I came to that is I'm one of those people who for a long time was like, okay, I don't know where I want to go. I don't necessarily know like what my values are, what my dream job is, anything like that. But I bet this journal will help me. And literally I have like five journals, like the Legend Planner, the ACT Daily Journal. I can't even tell you how many journals I have.
Oh, but you like the like journals that have prompts and like assignments in them.
Oh, yeah. Because I'm like, this will tell me what I am supposed to be doing.
And what have you learned?
As it turns out, goal setting is something that I, you know, outside of like very specific like skills that I'm looking to develop, like, okay, I might have a goal to like reduce my mile time, or I might have a goal to like compete in a boxing match. I don't necessarily have life goals because I don't know who the future me is going to be. So it's just sort of like evolving along the way. And all of these journals, like, they start with, where do you want to be in 5 years?
Right.
I'm like, who am I going to be in 5 years? Who am I to say that I know what that's going to look like at this point?
And, like, we could be living in a dystopian future in 5 years. So, like, who knows? Right?
Yeah. So, like, I go through all these processes to, like, try to articulate my long-term goals, my long-term vision. Nothing stuck. Nothing really felt like me. Nothing really felt like an aha moment. So I figured, well, maybe I'll just try like bumbling along and figuring it out and just you know, putting a lot of experiences in my backpack and taking them with me and seeing who comes out of it. So that's kind of been the path, but like, it's not a selling point to tell somebody like, hey, it's okay if you don't have a direction.
Oh, but you're selling me on this.
Well, I appreciate that.
I think there's just so much pressure to like figure ourselves out and to have a career plan and to have a trajectory. And certainly for me, as someone who's like neurodivergent and quirky, I really wanted to be a college professor because I didn't want to have a real job. Really, it was like I liked college. I liked the gratification of getting A's.
Yeah.
I liked the structure. I was like, oh, this will give me variety. It'll be cool. I'll have an office. I'll be Dr. Blauk. Like, that sounds great.
Yeah.
And then I got into it and there were things about it that were great, but I didn't like being on the faculty.
Yeah. It's like the day-to-day happiness element of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And part of my decision to leave was realizing that I didn't have a career goal. I was like, I have reached my career goal.
Yeah.
And
you tried it out.
And that sounds boring. Like, doing the same thing for the next like 30 years of my fucking life sounds boring.
Yes. Yeah. I think one of the things that I've learned is real happiness for me is about exploring a lot of different things and not trying to typecast. And so much of the world out there and the pressures that we feel are about like finding your narrative or finding like the one true thing that you want to do. And people are more complicated than that. There's never any one true thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's always about finding like a multitude of different things.
Yeah. When you say like the one true thing, like my stomach clenches and I'm like, there's like, no, there's no, I have been baking since I was like 13 and I love it. But if that was all I was doing all the time, I would shrivel up and die.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I'm sure there are people like that out there who have like one or two things that really, really give them joy. But I think for a lot of us, that's really kind of a false story that you're going to find fulfillment in everything or in like one single thing. And that's not going to change.
Right.
So, you know, the things that are invigorating right now, maybe they're not going to be that for me in a year from now or in 6 months from now. And that's fine.
Yeah, so, okay. So thinking of the things that are invigorating for you right now, Carrie writes both the side quest project and you have a podcast.
I do.
Which came first?
The side quest project actually came first.
Okay. So then let's start there.
Yeah.
To be in a linear historical fashion.
Yes, definitely.
So
this is the progress narrative.
Yeah. Okay, great. What is side questing?
Yeah, yeah. So the idea originally emerged because I was playing a lot of video games. I really love video games. I wrote about them in grad school. I've been playing them since I was 5. Very, very young person tackling Super Mario Brothers on Nintendo. And I was playing Skyrim one day, which is an open world game where you can kind of go on a lot of different paths. You don't have to play the main storyline. You can just kind of explore a massive map. And my boyfriend at the time, now husband, was watching me play Skyrim one day. And he said, are you ever going to play the main storyline? And I was like, eventually. But right now I'm just kind of exploring and finding new places. And it drove him nuts. Because he wanted to see that main storyline. And I was like, huh, I've never been one to like get to that main story because I just want to like explore these big open worlds. And I kind of did some reflection after that and realized like, okay, what really makes me happy and what really fulfills me is finding all of those things outside of that kind of main focus in my life, in stories, and seeing where they take me. And, you know, it conflicted with how I had sort of grown up as a very type A person, like did all the extracurriculars, took all the AP classes, went to a good college, went to grad school, did all of the things along that line. But when I reflected back and thought about my biggest accomplishments alongside the things that were really exciting and brought me joy and memorable, yeah, those accomplishments did make me happy. But some of the other things had nothing to do with accomplishments. Like, I jumped out of a plane on New Year's Day when I was 22 years old in Hawaii. That's a really memorable experience for me, even though, like, I didn't work towards that. It was just hey, I want to try this weird thing without really thinking about it. I wrote for a stand-up comedy periodical, which was really fun, and it gave me a lot of weird, really weird experiences. So,
that was one of the things we sort of bonded over in grad school, was you were writing for that publication, and I was doing a dissertation about humor.
Right.
And so we were able to geek out about that.
Yes. Yeah. And that had nothing to do with that very linear path that I was otherwise on in my career at that point as an academic. So, yeah, it was really like it emerged kind of organically as I did some reflection about what made me feel fulfilled and what really my values were as a person. I had sort of assumed growing up that it was all about ascension and accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't turn out to be the case nearly as much as I thought. That stuff's still important to me, but it was all those other things that I wanted to bring forward a little bit more that had been de-emphasized.
Yeah. I remember in grad school having so many goddamn hobbies and at one point being like, I can't take another class. I have to write my dissertation. But all I wanted to do was be taking dance lessons and ceramic classes and improv. And just like, I have long sort of struggled with feeling, because of capitalism, feeling like a bit of a failure because I'm not actually that interested in mastery. I just want to get like kind of good at a shit ton of stuff because I'm fascinated by it.
Yeah. I mean, when did dilettante become a bad word?
Ooh.
Is it a bad word? Like, I remember learning that word and thinking like, okay, people say this as if it's a bad thing, but aren't we all supposed to be exploring a lot of different things?
No. That's
turns
not
out, no.
That's not productive. That's
turns
not
out, no. Yeah. So that was another interesting moment. I don't remember how old I was. It was probably like an SAT vocabulary word. And I remember thinking like, oh, that sounds great. It's like a Renaissance person.
Yeah.
But no, it's actually like kind of pejorative.
Yeah, no, it has a pejorative connotation, but I'm like, oh, maybe I want to reclaim dilettante. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. That's a fun word.
Now's the time.
Yeah, now's the time. 2025, the year of the dilettante.
Yes, exactly.
You know, because virtuoso has more of a expert sense to it, to me.
Yeah.
That like, yeah, you know, I do want expertise in a few things, but like, I mostly just want to explore the shit out of a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
So, side questing.
Yes. So that's how it emerged. And what I was discovering, like, more recently this year was after work, like, my job, I typically, you know, shut down around 5:30, maybe 6 sometimes if I have a busy day. And then the rest of the evening is mine. And if I'm not at the gym, I typically, like, what I noticed was I had a habitual kind of routine of, okay, day ends, eat dinner, get on the couch, watch TV, play my video game, go to bed. And what I realized over time was that was making me less and less happy. Like,
ooh,
it was just filler material. It wasn't actually a reflection of how I wanted to spend my time. Like, I had a moment where I was like, I'm in my late 30s. If I get to my early 40s, my mid 40s, and I look back and I think, that's how I spent my time after work for 3 years. I would be pissed at myself. Like, that's not the life that future me would want for this me, I don't think.
Yeah.
And I just sort of knew that I needed to make a change in terms of like how I spent that free time.
All right. So then side questing became the paradigm and organizing principle.
Yes. Yeah. So I wanted to make sure that I was accountable. So I started like writing and documenting and basically trying to make sense of like what my feelings were when I was trying to spend my time in ways that weren't just like the defaults or like the immediate kind of dopamine hits that were increasingly not helpful.
Yeah. What was the like organizing principle for, all right, I don't want to just be watching TV and playing video games.
Yeah. So I started by making a list of things that I wanted to try, that I knew I had enjoyed like some sense in the past, but could also imagine like spinning off into something different in the future. So for instance, I knew I enjoyed art. I took some art classes in high school, but like, you know, life gets away and you don't often have time to do that sort of thing. So I thought, well, maybe I can have a side quest that's about watercoloring or sketching or making things out of polymer clay from something that I saw on Instagram. taking an art class.
Did you frame it at that, like, from the get-go as, like, these are side quests?
Yes. Yeah. And I defined it myself. Like, okay.
What is a side quest?
A main quest is career, family, like, when you introduce yourself to somebody at a dinner or a cocktail party, typically you'll say, hi, I'm Carrie. I'm a whatever title. I live in this city. Here's my husband. Here's my pet. That's right. The story.
Those are the main quests.
Yes, exactly. And I imagine for some people, the main quest would be being a parent, managing a household. You know, it's going to look differently for different people, but it's sort of those like defining day-to-day routines that kind of comprise your day. Side quests are things outside of that that have nothing to do with your career or your family necessarily, or really anything that's sort of like the 80% of your life. Mm-hmm. So hobbies. Art. And I made a very explicit decision not to include like career development stuff side quest, because I thought that's part of my career. That stuff is really important to me too, but I'm going to leave that for during the workday.
Okay. So you made a list. You were like, let me try this shit. Let me start a blog about it.
Yeah. And I basically got started. And the way that I got started was at the end of 2023, my husband and I went on a retreat to a mindfulness-focused resort complex in Western Mass. That was our Christmas gift to each other. And I said, okay, before I go, I want to try things that I've never done before that are entirely new to me, that aren't part of my, like, oh, I want to get better at this thing that I know I'm pretty decent at.
You are also a recovering perfectionist.
Yes, very much so.
And so how hard was this for you?
It was very hard. There's always fear in choosing to do something that you're not, that you don't know if you'll be good at it or not.
Yeah.
And choosing something that, you know, the fear of being found out as a newbie or as an amateur is likewise significant. So there were all sorts of classes at this resort in, you know, things like fitness, or, you know, I work out at a boxing gym like 5 days a week. So I could have done a class in boxing and done pretty well at it.
What did you choose instead?
I chose past life regression.
Oh, okay.
Which was bonkers. I chose kintsugi art, which is the Japanese art of mending broken pottery with gold lacquer and adhesive.
Yeah, I remember your post about that, and I'll link to it in the show notes. And just that it reminded me that that existed. And there's just something so beautiful in the like concept of, yeah, if it's broken, simple. We heal it with gold. We don't try to hide over the cracks. We glue them back together with gold. Everything's precious and beautiful and allowed.
Yeah.
And fucking A, man. If we could just like live there.
That reminds me of mine turned out pretty well. It's I think I was supported by the fact that it actually only broke into three pieces when I smashed it. The poor woman next to me, though, hers broke into seven pieces.
Ooh.
She had such a hard time with the adhesive that we were all wearing rubber gloves. Her rubber gloves got stuck to it.
Oh, no.
And she just painted over them in gold. And she was like,
her.
You know, this looks terrible, but it's mine and we'll just paint it over. And it's very real. It was reflective of her struggle. And
right.
I think she came to like it. But, you know, in that moment, I was like, I could feel those patterns of like my pottery has to look good. It has to look better. It has to be, you know, something that I want to put on my shelf. But it wasn't about that. So, you know, a lot of it is about getting out of those thought patterns and those mental models that haven't served us.
Yeah.
You know, perfectionism, of course, being a big one, especially
in
that setting.
It is uncomfortable and it's hard and it takes like intentional effort. So you've been doing this kind of side quest intentionally for about a year now.
Yeah.
Yeah. What has evolved in your relationship with perfectionism and your free time?
Yeah. Yeah. Great question. I can definitely say that I am less focused on being perfect and more comfortable with failure. I think part of that is going through this process and, you know, continuing to write about it and really make a focused effort to be aware and like mindful of how I'm feeling in that moment of side questing. I think part of it is I'm really fortunate to have my main quest, my day job. I work at a very growth mindset oriented company. So that's helped a lot in terms of my recovering from perfectionism. But, I think it's also like taking time to be present and kind of establish more patterns of self-talk that like, yeah, you're going to try something and you might suck and that's fine. Like you're just trying it out. It's okay. And like,
if only the voices in our heads would actually be that nice.
Wouldn't it be nice? Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, I do like I get there, but I have to notice that the parts being like an
it's
asshole to me about not getting it right immediately.
Yep. Yeah.
Like fucking A. I used to like my students would show up and I would tell them like, you're here to learn. You're not here to show me that you already have it figured out. But like I was thinking about this a couple weeks ago, like nobody told me that in grad school. Like, no. I really thought I was supposed to already know all this shit already. And I like forgot how to learn things.
Yeah.
And it was so painful. It's so painful to like want to already be good at the thing.
Totally. Totally. And it's never realistic either.
No.
Like, why would any of us ever expect to be excellent at something we try for the first time?
I don't
like,
know.
Like, it doesn't make any sense.
But we do.
But we
so
do.
We're, so it came from somewhere.
We do. Yeah. Like, I think... I mean, it's sort of like the threat of failure, I think, is so ingrained in us that like if we don't keep moving forward, if we don't keep getting better, bad things will happen. We won't be able to be productive or contribute or survive in our like very cutthroat society.
Or loved or accepted or seen as valuable or worthwhile, right?
Yeah.
Like
being a good person, like does that matter? No, not necessarily to a lot of people.
Not if there are socks on your floor. I don't know. Like,
I mean, that's true. Like, God forbid. But yeah, like it's so ingrained. I think like it has to be cultural. You know, and I would actually be curious to see like how much of that is built into like the American North American fabric. Do you see different levels of perfectionism in countries outside of the U.S.? Because, like, you know, we are very much a society and a culture in this country of, like, bootstraps. You put the work in. Nothing is more important than being productive and all that, which, of course, is going to give us a complex about perfectionism because we're only worthy if we're producing to the highest level possible.
Yeah. So, and I really appreciate that there does seem to be, at least in the Instagram accounts I follow, that there is a zeitgeist around like, this is some bullshit and we need to dial it back.
Yes. Yeah. My hope is that like Gen Z in particular seems to be especially resistant to that notion that we have to kind of continue on that journey. This is a gross like generalization, of course. But that's my sense, just sort of like reading the Instagram world of how people talk about cultures of work and balance and lifestyle and things like that.
Yeah. So, and like what's actually important.
Yes.
So what advice would you give someone who's like, I like the side quest idea. What parameters would you offer if they were to like embark on a like, this is going to be my year of side quests?
Yeah. So one framing that I found really helpful is if you find something that you might possibly be interested in trying out and you can't think of a reason to say no, do it.
Mm-hmm.
My original thought process was I need to be able to say yes to something to make it worth my while. Mm. But that was like a really self-limiting belief that I would know best, or I had like the necessary information to be able to tease out like whether something was going to be worthwhile. So I'll give an example. When I rappelled down a building in Cambridge, that was only because I saw an Instagram ad of like, do you want to rappel down a building? I think was the copy in the Instagram ad. And for a second, I was like, is there a reason I should say no to that? And there wasn't. So I signed up right there.
Yeah.
And reframing from like, find the reason to say no rather than find the reason to say yes has made it easier to kind of like commit to doing new things and trying new things without kind of self-editing. Which...
Yeah, that's really interesting because in some areas of life, I'm a big proponent of fuck yes or no.
Yeah.
Right? Like when we are trying to filter and make decisions based on like what is actually in alignment with our highest good, right? Like, fuck yes or no. However, when it comes to trying new things,
yes.
Like, I am more inclined to be like, no, I couldn't possibly because here's some reasons.
Yeah. And I think the way that it showed up for me in a way that like allowed me to not self-edit was recognizing that I was only committing to try a thing once. I wasn't committing to make it my life. I wasn't saying like no to all of these other things because I'm saying yes to this thing. It was a very confined thing that I was saying yes to. So that made it easier in a lot of ways to find those side quests and pursue them and kind of get out of the habit of staying in my lane a little
yeah.
bit because it was just a much lower barrier to entry.
Yeah. So you have not like taken up rappelling now and it's
no.
your side hobby of all the time. Rappelling
no.
down a building once was sufficient.
You know, maybe I would do it again for another fundraiser, but I think more what I really learned from that was that thought process of like, it's really just about finding a reason to not say no.
Yeah.
And finding out the things that you don't have to necessarily be fully on board with, but trying them is not a huge deal and that you can
yeah.
still just try a thing.
Yeah. What did you learn from, I mean, aside from the like mindset shift, but like, what did you learn about yourself rappelling down a building?
I learned that I don't really feel fear very intimately.
Oh, like, okay.
It was kind of surprising because basically the way that it worked is we would get suited up, geared up, then they took us on the elevator to the roof of the building. And there were no ledges or barriers or rails or anything like that because nobody is supposed to really be up there except people who are trained to be up there. And as I stepped over the ledge and started like rappelling down, everything in my body was saying like, oh, you should probably not do this. But I didn't feel any, like, I didn't feel the pit of my stomach feeling. I didn't feel like, oh, run away. This is hundreds of feet off the ground. All I really felt was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I can feel the evolution side of me saying, don't step over the edge of the building. But I didn't feel anything in an embodied sense. So that was a really interesting thing that I learned about myself and
yeah.
has definitely made me try to be more mindful of like the physical feelings. I'm not sure if this has been your experience, but as like somebody who's very cerebral, I've historically been extremely disconnected from anything visceral and part of my body. So a good learning experience that the thing that's very scary objectively didn't yield an obvious physical response.
Yeah, no, I do tend to have visceral reactions to things, but in terms of heights specifically, if I were in a harness or if there are like safety rails, like I'm like, whatever, I fucking love heights.
Yeah.
Get me near it without some sort of safety barrier, then I do
That's
get
rough.
A little vertigo-y and it's scary to me.
Yeah.
Cool. So, okay. How did Brodents, Carrie is the co-host of a podcast called Brodents that I'm going to let her introduce.
Yes.
And I want to know how that came into being.
Yeah. Yeah. So Brodents is a podcast about rats, typically how rats show up in culture, popular culture, how they show up in history, in some cases, internationally. And I don't recall when my friend and I started it, but it was her idea. She said, man, we should really do a podcast about rats. And I was like,
okay,
yeah, I'm
But like, because you guys are both really into rats.
Her more than me. I could.
Okay.
What I appreciate about them is their complexity. They're very much, and that I come at it from like the most cultural studies perspective possible, which
yeah.
is we find them revolting culturally.
Yes.
But they're so fascinating. And why are we so fascinated and obsessed with rats, even though we also hate them? So there's kind of a paradoxical
yeah, yeah, yeah.
relationship that we have.
Yeah.
And
okay. So was this one of the examples of you not having a good reason to say no?
I that was a genuine yes, because
okay.
I love doing creative projects, especially with my friends. And I like studying things that people don't typically study. And learning really deeply about them like sort of the underdog stories in pop culture. And rats definitely seem to be one of those things.
Yeah.
And I started doing some research about them and thought like, okay, there's a lot here in terms of culture and history.
Yeah, I love that. And part of the reason I have wanted to have you on this podcast was to have my little journalistic moment of I was getting ready to launch, to like finally fucking sit down and start recording this podcast. And I'd been dragging my feet and feeling so like, oh my God, what are people going to think? Ah, like getting so stuck in that. And y'all launched Broden. And I saw Broden's on Instagram and I was like, and I listened to it and I was like, you know what? If Carrie can fucking record a podcast about rats and put it out in the world, I absolutely can sit down and record this thing that I am very passionate about and have a lot to say about.
I love
that. And know is going to be valuable. And so I wanted to thank you
for
just doing a thing that brought you joy and like not fucking caring.
Yeah. I know it's weird as hell. So does my co-host. We know it's weird. And that's part of the fun of it is we have an excuse to weird out together, to be creative, to dive into something that I don't think either of us would have dove into to the extent that we have, except for the podcast. So figured why not try it out and see, you know, I don't really care if people listen. It's more about like the process of creating something with a close friend of mine that really makes us both happy.
Yeah, you right. And y'all, I do appreciate that. Like you, it is researched and y'all are having a good time.
We very much are. Like,
and I never would have listened to a podcast about rats, except for the Radiolab episode where they talk about how rats laugh. Like that one's great.
There's some really fascinating research about them that like still very much need to unpack.
Yeah, well, right, because they get research. I mean, they're the like primary, one of the primary research subjects that we try to understand human brains via rat behavior, which is interesting.
I mean, that's another thing. Like, how do we best understand ourselves? Is it through the rats? Is Broden some metaphor? Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe Broden's is how I came to understand about myself.
Ooh, yeah. Okay, what has it taught you? What has Broden's taught you about yourself?
I speak really slowly compared to a lot of people. I'm from the Midwest, so I have a very like measured cadence. I don't use a lot of filler words typically, and I'm not afraid of a silence. So I listen to the podcast and I listen to the contrast in my and my co-host's energy, and it's stark. And I never really identified as a low energy person or as a slow person, slow talker from the Midwest. But it's kind of funny to get another view of yourself and reflecting upon your contrast with another person as you're recording something together and watching something together. And I think, too, another thing, you know, more seriously is I left academia 6 years ago. More than 6 years ago at this point, I still really love learning about new weird things. That was so much of my focus in grad school, is finding a weird thing and learning more about it. Like that was my research agenda. And I'm still doing that, but in a way that's much more fun and casual and creative and doesn't require passing oral examinations about rats.
Right.
Although I would love to take that.
Or it speaking about rats.
Reviewed. I don't need to cite like really hardcore academic sources. It's just fun. And it's a way to kind of get that. I get those revs of the research and I get that kind of shot of the research input impulse in myself and without all of the additional baggage.
Yeah. What I hear in that is the opportunity to take something that you liked from a prior career sort of field and skill set and channel it into something that you want to do just for the sake of doing it.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. And you don't have to talk about ontology.
No. Although I may have. Who knows?
Yeah. And it's funny, I'm listening to you and I'm like, oh, this is sort of the flip side, because like my graduate school experience, I was studying stuff that made me deeply uncomfortable. And so writing my dissertation was a deeply unpleasant experience.
Yeah.
And now I'm getting to channel that like innate curiosity and exploration into things that light me up.
Yeah.
And I get to talk about things in a way that is accessible. And that was one of the really painful aspects of academia for me, was that I had to write this dissertation that was about humor and identity politics, but I had to write it in a way that was not accessible.
Or funny.
Or
probably.
Funny. Or fun. Yeah. I did get to cite Chris Pratt in my conclusion, and that made me really happy.
That's good.
But for the most part, no, it was not.
Yeah. Academia is not kind to especially creative forms.
No.
But yeah, I think in hearing what you're saying and sort of turning it over in my mind, there's so much that we can extract from the path that we've taken and use that to fuel where we want to go next. I have no regrets about doing academia. I had a fantastic time.
Yeah.
I learned a lot. I made a ton of friends who I still like. I don't want it as a career, but going through academia allowed me to better understand the things that I really did like, which was working with other people who are brilliant and thoughtful thinkers and analysts, researching things that I thought were interesting or that were sort of understudied and not understood very well. Like, you can pull those threads forward from paths that didn't work out and use them to get to the next place.
Yeah, that's so true. And I remember when I was leaving academia, having this conversation with my sponsor at the time about how, like, just because we're good at something doesn't mean it's the right fit. You know, I was a good teacher. I was good at what I did. And yet life outside of work was taking so much effort to just be okay. And like, that was an indicator to me that like a pivot was necessary. But because I had built a lot of my sense of self around, like, first I was a college student, then I was a grad student, and then I was a professor. Like, that's who I was. And like, who the fuck am I going to be without that? Oh my God. You know, but I can see the through lines. I can still draw on those skill sets and apply them to kind of what I'm doing now. But what I learned from that whole process is like, when we let go of this, of the thing that we think is the like core, so much possibility opens up, right? Like, that part of my main quest had ended.
Yes. And you'll have a new one or a conglomerate of side quests, and either one is fine.
Yeah. Because like, even when I think about, like, I'm so in love with this podcast, but if I think like 5 or 10 years out from now, I'm like, I don't know if I'm still going to be doing this.
Yeah. Like, how could any of us know?
Yeah, but we're supposed to.
Yes. Yeah.
We're supposed to have a plan.
The 5-year plan.
And a mission. Yeah, I've never had a 5-year plan.
No.
I can, like, sometimes manage a year of, like, okay, like, what am I trying to do right now?
Yeah.
But, like, beyond that, I'm like, I don't know. So what are some of the sort of side quests you've done? What's on your horizon?
Yeah, so my most recent side quest was running a 5K, which was by no means something that was especially unique. Plenty of people run 5Ks. The reason that I did it is I've never identified as a runner. And so I just wanted to see if I could. And I did better than I expected. So I think that was a moment where I had kind of let my self story get the better of me over the past 30 years. I'm like, So that was the most recent. Before that, I've done, you know, art, building rappelling, met a seal at the aquarium, which was great. We fed her fish.
I want to slow down and talk about the running, because this is, you know, so this is a little bit of part of my journey too. I was the fat kid. So I was like the opposite of athletic. And then I was a smoker for a long time. And then I got sober. And then I was about to turn 30 and just like got into my head that like a healthy 30-year-old adult should be able to run a 5K. Like, this was like the arbitrary decision that I made for myself. And I fucking hated running at the time. And this was back in grad school when I was like, I need to prove things to myself. And so that's how I started running, was with this sense of I am a grown-up. This is a thing that other grown-ups do, and I could do this. And for me, it ultimately led to I am a runner now. Like, that is a part of my identity. I like long distance running. Half marathons are the perfect distance. They're goofily long, but the point is, like, I learned that it was really good for my mental health, that it's actually, for me, a really good way of channeling sort of anxiety and undiagnosed ADHD. It ended up being really good. And I never would have, like, found that as a resource if I hadn't tried something that I wasn't good at.
Yeah. It's really hard to get past those narratives that we've kind of established over years, but God, how rewarding. And now it is a part of yourself.
Yeah. And there's plenty of other shit that I've tried that I'm not good. Like, during the pandemic, as we all did, you know, like, I tried to learn to make sourdough.
Yep.
I had fun with that. Didn't adopt it as a way of being.
Anything we do is going to be data and is going to shape us. Yeah, like the running thing was really interesting. It sounded like in your case, was it more of a conformist thing of like, I need to do what other adults do?
Good question. I think so. That was part of it. I think it was also, I wanted to like prove to myself that I could like learn something and stick with it. But it was very much like health and fitness oriented as someone who had never identified as like athletic. It's funny. I still don't identify as athletic. And
even though
people
you've
who
run marathons.
Yeah. Like people, right. It's, or as an athlete, like there's this, it's just so funny to me the way we like attach, like speaking, like circling back to the dilettante thing. It's the way we attach meaning to words for me. And then I don't identify with that. You know, I don't identify as artistic, even though I'm very creative.
Right.
And it's just interesting, right? So like, I run 4 days a week. When I'm got my shit together, I'm usually running 20 to 25 miles a week. But in my, that doesn't make me an athlete. I don't know what makes somebody an athlete, but apparently that's not it, right? Whereas I was listening to you and I'm like, oh, but you go to the boxing gym all the time. So
right.
Like, yeah, you're like fit and healthy. So like, why wouldn't you be able to run a 5K?
That's part of the thing is even like literally 5 days a week is how often I'm going right now. And even at my slow points, it would be at least 3 times a week, which would be about 4 hours a week of straight boxing workouts. Hardest thing I've ever done. But part of the thing about signing up for this 5K is I had done so much boxing and I just thought, well, maybe that'll help me run. And I wasn't sure if it would. Obviously, it's going to help because it's all cardio. But I still had so much doubt. And my only goal for myself, because I had so much doubt, because of the identity and the story that I had sort of established for myself, was all I want to do is get to the finish line without walking. Doesn't matter how slow I run. I just want to finish having run the whole thing. Super low bar.
Yeah.
Which I think was fine. My goal was never to achieve a particular speed or anything like that. It was just to do it and see if I liked it or could, and just gathering info.
Yeah.
And I did it, and I did better than I expected. But that was honestly less important than me than having tried it in the first place. Because that was the harder thing, honestly, was getting past that vision that I don't meet the criteria of somebody who runs 5Ks. So much of the decision making, I think, of how we spend our time and how we identify is based in these rigid beliefs established years before that moment.
Yeah. And how infrequently we interrogate them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, like the only reason that I've been able to do this is because I've been through, at this point, years of therapy with like a really great fit for myself, somebody who practices acceptance and commitment therapy, which is all about living according to your values and being present and mindfulness. And it was through those conversations that I became I developed my ability to be present and aware of how I was feeling on the way to understand how I could live more according to my values. But without that self-awareness and without that, like, multiple years of building my ability to have any level of self-awareness, all of that was necessary.
Totally. Yeah, I would have been, I don't know, like a year or two into therapy at that time. And, you know, and what's funny to me, looking back on that sort of period of time and that moment in my life when I was like, okay, a healthy 30-year-old adult should be able to run a 5K. I'm going to make myself do that. And then I immediately went to, I'm going to run a marathon someday. And it was very much tied to my, like, unhealed sense of inner worthiness, of needing to prove things, right? That, like, that decision to run a marathon was really about, I'm going to prove this to myself, unaware of the underlying, like, sense of unworthiness that felt like I needed to prove things, right? And what's been beautiful about that journey for me in therapy and coaching and doing the work is getting to a place of like, oh, I don't need, like, do I want to do that? I run half marathons now because it feels really good to my body. I like having a degree of, like, goal orientation, and I like shiny objects. But
you,
like,
get a medal.
Yeah, you get a medal. Like, it doesn't matter how slow you go, I get a medal. And I'm like, this is great. And it keeps me fit, and it helps with my mental health. So there's, like, an alignment there. But it's so beautiful to be in this place in my life where I'm like, I don't need to prove shit to myself anymore.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't need to prove shit to other people conceptually. Emotionally, I do still have to work on that with some frequency.
Yeah, I mean, those old patterns, those old habits creep in so easily. That's really cool, though. It sounds like you found a good middle ground, which, like, I mean, that's another lesson of all of this work is, like, so often my mentality was, I need to find the perfect way to spend my time. I'm not doing mindfulness right if my mind is wandering. So I shouldn't do it at all because I can't do this thing. But it's not about finding that thing and doing it 100%. It's about finding the realistic middle ground that, like, yeah, sometimes you're going to sit down and meditate and there's going to be noise in the background. That's realistic. Sometimes you're going to run a race and run slow, and that's realistic. It doesn't have to be like an all or nothing kind of thing.
Sometimes I'm going to run a race and I'm going to walk because it's, like, hot and humid and I don't feel good. And sometimes, like, it's going to be a day that it's going to hit 100 and I don't care enough. Like, there's a race in Portland that's on the 4th of July that I've been supposed to run 3 times. And it just, like, keeps not happening.
It sounds like you're taking care of yourself, though.
Yeah. And that's been a huge journey because I absolutely used to be someone who would, like, power through and was, like, so concerned with, like, what are other people going to think and disappointing people and, oh, I don't want to be a quitter.
Yeah.
Like, boo on all of that.
One thing I'm still batting away a little bit, but I'm way better at it. I participate in a program at my boxing gym called Team Training, which is 10 weeks, at least, like, 5 hours or so a week of boxing training, like, really hard training, often sprints and cardio and all of those things. And maybe like 15 other people, reliably, complete slowest person every single time whenever we did sprints. And at first it bothered me. I thought, God, they're going to think I'm just, like, terribly unathletic. They're going to think I'm, you know, not supposed to be here. I had desires to be like, my legs are shorter than yours because I'm 5 feet tall. And, like, rationalize why. Yeah, exactly. It's my genetics. And basically make excuses for the fact that I wasn't performing well. But over time, what I realized is, like, I'm still going to work with these people. I'm still going to learn. Who cares if I'm the slowest one, if I'm making a little bit better progress every single time? And I'm still just getting something out of this. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm the slowest person because I'm still doing my best. Which sounds, like, really trite, but that's really what kind of got me.
I mean, I am deeply impressed because, like, I don't do running groups because I'm the slowest person and it feels terrible to me. And I'd rather just, like, having a running practice. Yeah. So, like, I'm just going to,
if it wasn't required, that would be another thing.
Okay. well, good job. Like, making lemonade out of those lemons.
Yes.
That's amazing. How did you get into boxing?
It was actually during grad school when I was studying for my comprehensive exams, which involves reading a book a day for about 9 months. So most of my day to day was, okay, wake up, sit in my apartment, read a book, write notes about it, maybe go out and meet up with people. But in the summertime, a lot of people weren't around. So I was just sort of going through this very isolated experience, and one that didn't necessarily lend itself to any physical activity.
How boxing, though?
Yeah, I figured I needed something that was going to take me out of my head. I never really did a serious martial art. I did karate as a 6 or 7 year old, but always thought that women boxers in particular were really strong and kind of both physically and like mentally, constitutionally, because boxing is a very masculine space. Boxing gyms are hyper masculine, and the culture of the sport generally is very masculine. So I was sort of casually Googling boxing gyms in Austin, and I found one that was only women. And I thought, so I could join this gym and spend my time with a bunch of other women who likewise are subverting gender norms, committing to physical fitness, hitting shit, which was appealing, especially in this very cerebral moment that I was having. And I'm really grateful to my past self for doing this, but I kind of pushed past the discomfort of cold emailing this company and saying, like, hey, can I join? Can I try a trial intro class? And, you know, sort of the rest kind of fell into place. I started going 2 or 3 days a week, learning the fundamentals, never really sparring at that point, but really just kind of working out in a way that had never pushed me physically as much before in my life. Hardest thing I've done, probably hopefully the hardest thing I'll ever do physically.
Yeah.
And it's just been great for me for all forms of health.
Yeah. So what part, like, what did that side quest that has become a staple teach you about yourself?
A lot of resilience, that these days when I do get punched in the face, it's not the end of the world. I am sparring now. So I do get, I literally get punched in the face.
Yeah,
a lot.
I was just thinking about that. I was like, oh my God, you like actually mean that.
I do.
I do. I'm so impressed and admiring and have zero interest in
yeah,
that. I think my reason to say no is just
not
all of me is
that.
Like, nope.
Yep.
Nope. Like, I do have curiosity. You know what? Maybe I will commit to myself that sometime in 2025, I will take a kickboxing class, because I do have curiosity and interest in that, and I've never tried it.
Why not?
And so I will be like, okay, Carrie, I got
That's
near
yours.
Boxing.
Yes. I mean, they will have you do punches too. It's not just
But like not
traditional Olympic boxing.
Yeah, but like it's only like it's gonna be in a bag, and there's nobody's gonna hit me in the face. I'm
That's
not
fine.
Going anywhere near that.
80% of the time I'm just working on a bag, and most of us are. So
yeah,
definitely a lot of resilience, that not only am I able to weather getting punched in the face, I can react to it. I don't get nervous about it nearly as much as I used to. And, you know, outside of the sparring ring, the workouts that we do are so damn hard. Yeah. Last night we did 9 minutes of sprinting. So three-minute rounds of pure sprinting.
No.
But I did it. And that's not something that if you said to me, hey, go do a workout, 9 minutes of sprinting on your own, probably would have said, like, that's not realistic. I'm going to injure myself.
Yeah. So part of me is just like, okay, this sounds terrible. Like, everything about this sounds kind of terrible.
Yes.
So what do you love about it? Like, what, how, why is this the thing for you?
I am never as present as I am when I'm boxing. Mm. Never a single moment in my life. And that's because it's so challenging. It's so uncomfortable, like, still, because it isn't something that I've historically been good at, that all I can do is focus on what I'm doing in that moment. I don't have the luxury to be able to like spin off and think about something else. It really helps me kind of anchor myself where I am and not spiral and not overthink and just be and do. And they say like going to the gym is more about discipline than motivation. I very much feel that. I'm not somebody who's really ever like, oh, I really want to go work out right now. I really love how I feel when I'm done, though. The endorphins, the relaxation, the accomplishment, the knowledge that I'm like strong enough to do these really hard workouts is incredibly gratifying. By breaking you down, it shows you really what you're capable of. Because even though a thing is hard, you get through it. So I don't like getting punched in the face.
No, well, yeah, okay.
I don't like that.
I didn't assume. But that was, you know, that was beautiful. And I was listening to you and I was like, okay, so much of the way you are describing that is how I feel about running.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's part of the reason I need to sign up for races is because it keeps me disciplined, because I don't have a running group because I feel like the slow fat kid and I don't like that feeling. But I do have to be present because I will trip on the fucking sidewalk and break my face if I'm not being careful. And yeah, it is deeply gratifying on a Saturday to like get in the bathtub and be like, I just ran 10 miles.
Yeah.
As someone who like in junior high, that like 1 mile thing was like the most miserable day of my life.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yep.
You know, there's just something really beautiful about what we can do, whether we're like built for it or not, whether we're, you know, quote unquote, naturally inclined.
Yeah.
I think I want to find a better way of phrasing it, but there is something beautiful about proving things to ourselves.
Yeah. I like to think, well, I personally think about it as sort of a balloon that's expanding. Like we start out as, you know, a very deflated, tiny balloon, but then our sense of self just sort of grows and expands as we breathe more into it. And the mental shift that I had in all of this like questing was, it isn't about finding a singular core self. Like there are any number of selves. Like I think we all contain multitudes and there isn't a single place that we're trying to go, sort of capturing all of that diversity and all of that essence out in the world. That's, you know, frankly, just beyond that very small core that we imagine. We have assumptions about ourselves that are probably really fixed.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be that way. We are all multiple people.
Yeah. Carrie, this has been a treat.
It has.
How do people, where do you want people to find you?
You can go to thesidequestproject.com to read all of my latest.
And then Brodence is available.
Spotify, it's not called iTunes anymore. Apple Music.
I make Apple Podcasts every time. I know, right?
Okay.
Because, yeah, I don't know.
I'm terrible at promotion, but yeah, it's just called Brodence Podcast. It's awesome. On Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Great.
And yeah, we inconsistently put out episodes, but all of the backlog is available at any time.
Yeah. I want to put in a request to the ether around that. So did you ever watch Fraggle Rock?
Yes, but I don't have very many strong memories of it.
Yeah. So I was revisiting that this year as a just like self-soothing like moment. And there are two rats and a trash heap are like primary characters in a way that is deeply bizarre. So maybe not Fraggle Rock specifically, but like the rat characters and the Muppets.
So many of them.
There are a lot.
Sesame Street, too.
Okay. So so puppet rats.
Yes.
I would love at some point to make
a deep dive
appearance. Amazing. All right, Carrie, last question. What brings you joy?
I would say at this moment, being present brings me joy. But if I had to be more specific about an activity or something like that, I would say spending time with people around me who I care about and extract energy from. And at the moment, that's my husband and my dog, to be schmaltzy. But we help each other be better. which I love. Or explore new things. Not necessarily be better, but explore new things.
How about both?
Let's do both. Let's do both.
Awesome. Carrie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please help me grow the podcast by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing it with anyone you think would benefit from hearing it too. Your support means the world to me. If you'd like to get updates about new episodes, posts, and offerings, please visit settlingisbullshit.com to subscribe to my newsletter. You can also find information there about working with me one-on-one to build your most amazing life. Until next time, remember that I believe in you and that you are fucking awesome.